All right, and welcome back to another episode of the Pocket Protectors Podcast. I am your host. My name is Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter, Brown Jason. Got everybody with me here today. The man, the myth, the legend.
Doctor.
Luke? Eric Eager. Oh. No, man, we're starting with you. You know, putting out the picks all season long, doing your thing with that. You know, letting us know what's going to happen in these playoffs upcoming, you know, with that great work that you and George just put out for PFF. What's going on, man?
Things are good, man. It's, school's on hiatus for a while. We're doing some really fun projects at PFF. It's been a fun week of just kind of diving into football, looking forward to this weekend's games, even though the Vikings aren't playing. So all is good.
Yeah, we've been away for a little while. So, you know, how's the holiday season treated you thus far?
Good. I got, the Vikings Duck Grey Duck sweatshirt, which is second to my Teddy sweatshirt that I got at the climbingthepodcast.com/clothes. Got some decent gifts, got some time to relax. It'll be nice, you know, now that, you know, there's not like 17 games on at once. I can just watch one game for fun as opposed to monitoring our picks. So, yeah, nice on the blood pressure.
Yeah, and so, you know, I know this is a tangent, but help me understand this duck, duck, gray duck thing and why it's only that in Minnesota, whereas everywhere else, it seems in the world is duck, duck, goose.
I got this one.
Oh, you okay. Go ahead.
Okay.
Because it was... So in Minnesota, everybody is of Nordic descent, like Swedish, Norway, Northern European. And in Swedish, that game translates. I forget what the words are. I can't say them because I don't speak Swedish. But in their word for goose was just gray duck. It was like duck. It translates directly to duck, duck, gray duck. And that's how the game was invented. And it is of Swedish descent. So we say duck, duck, gray duck because that is a more literal translation from its Swedish roots.
So you're a bunch of hipsters is basically what you're saying.
Sure.
Okay. All right. That's simple. In Minnesota, they're just very hipster about this. Everyone else is wrong. You guys are right. So it's gray duck and the rest of the world are idiots.
It's wrong.
Okay. Okay. All right. I understand now. I understand. And Luke.
What's up?
You know? Haven't spoken to you in a little while either. You know, how has your holiday season been treating you? What have you been up to? How are things?
Holiday season was good. Flew back to Minnesota. Got to see the family, experience the winter. But, you know, everybody else just had all their Christmas. Playoffs is my Christmas. I have a ritual. I will watch every game. I will pound beer all of these weekends. The playoffs are my favorite time of year. I love this. Get to watch four good quality, high stakes football games. Between the best of the best, this is the best time of year.
So for you, going into this time of year, because, you know, you're generally a fairly analytical person, you know, you're going in, looking at the matchups, look at the numbers, things like that. But as you get to the playoffs, are you still doing all of that or are you just kind of jumping in and enjoying it all as a fan?
So every year I do predictions, mostly just for fun and like maybe I'll tweet them out or whatever. I actually did a guest post at VikingsTerritory.com that will go out sometime before wildcard weekend with my predictions. I did a little bit more analytically driven this time with the article that I wrote this week, which I guess we'll talk about in a minute. So I do that and then kind of root for it, but usually I just sit back. Like, I understand the idea that, like, you can look at all the averages and trends and all that, but when you get into a single game sample, all of that kind of has a minimal effect because, like, fluky crap happens. So I'm just sitting back and enjoying the ride as a fan of good football.
And that's awesome. And that's something I guess we can talk about as well. And we'll put that up on the side here to make sure that we talk about it when we get into Eric's stuff because, you know, obviously as you go through this and we're looking at the matchups and things like that and, you know, when you think of, say, like the NBA and the way that they have, you know, a best of four series, generally speaking, kind of at the end of that tournament, you can feel fairly confident that the best team won just because of how things go. I'd be definitely curious to see, you know, with something like, you know, a single elimination tournament like you see in the NFL playoffs, how often is it that, you know, the team that would go into the playoff that we consider to be the best team actually wins? Or does that fluky stuff that Luke's talking about maybe kind of knock that team out of contention a little bit more often than maybe we would like to think? I'm looking at you, Eli Manning, twice. Yeah.
So if we look at the last few seasons, right, the Super Bowl last year was between a one seed and a two seed, right? With New England versus Atlanta, and I think most people would have probably chosen Atlanta in the way that they were trending over Dallas, the one seed. So that was kind of hashtag as expected. In 2015, the Broncos were the one seed in the AFC. The Panthers were the one seed in the NFC. 2014, trying to think back, the Seahawks were the one seed in the NFC, and the Patriots were the one seed in the AFC. So just kind of like thinking anecdotally backwards, these kind of like have been, and then in 2013, both the Broncos and the Seahawks were the one seeds, right? So the last four Super Bowls, we've only seen one, two, or lower seed, right? And, you know, so you have to kind of go back, I think, all the way to like what Joe Flacco and the Baltimore Ravens in 2012. And the Niners against the Falcons in 2012 as well, where a road team won a conference championship. So, you know, that's obviously like the pinnacle, but like we haven't seen a ton of upsets in recent seasons.
Well, I guess that bodes well for the team that we all follow. And kind of, you know, with that said, I'll use it as a transition here because, Luke, you mentioned that you wrote an article. And one of the things that we hear a lot from the talking heads on TV is that it's important. It doesn't really matter how well you're playing at the start of the season. It's the teams that are playing well at the end of the season that often are the ones who will make noise. So some of the things that people will say is that, you know, looking at, you know, those outliers like, you know, the Giants or the Ravens, it was like they got hot in December and were able to carry that momentum with them into the playoffs. And then, you know, a couple upsets and, you know, next thing you know, they're winning the Super Bowl. So you wrote a piece that kind of outlined, you know, breaking things down for us a little bit there about who are the hottest teams going into the playoffs. So, you know, give us a little bit of background on that and let us know how we should feel about, you know, these teams and these matchups we're going to see as we get into the playoffs this weekend.
Yeah, so I wanted to do something about, like, I basically wanted to see, like, okay, what inputs are going to be the best for predicting actual playoff performance? Because we've seen so much anecdotal evidence of, like, 15-1 Aaron Rodgers getting upset by the 9-7 Giants and all kinds of stories like that, you know, 2007 and all that. So I wanted to say, okay, what's, like, predictive? And I actually took this idea from Cynthia Freeland, who is an NFL Network. It was from her podcast with Matt Money Smith on the NFL Podcast Network, which is great content. If you're listening to this and not listening to that, you're playing yourself. But her model bases most of its data off of the last four games, the most recent four games, which is kind of similar to like when DVOA weights itself toward later stuff. And that just makes sense anecdotally. Like, it doesn't matter what the Vikings did in week one against the Saints, right? Because the quarterback's different. The Saints are composed totally different. Injuries have happened. It's like a different team. You want to look at the most recent data. So I looked at the last four games and stuff like run success and pass success and explosive plays. I took from Pro Football Focus and from Sharp Football and then just some more traditional stuff like yards per attempt just to see who was hottest in different facets of football. And so, like, the hottest quarterback right now, Big Ben, is really lighting it up. He's the best quarterback by QBR in the last 4 weeks, best in yards per attempt, second best in passer rating. And so I think anybody would be hard-pressed to go into Pittsburgh in the divisional round and beat him. Second best quarterback by QBR is Tyrod Taylor, which I think is amazing. He drops a little off after passer rating and yards per attempt, and his average depth of target isn't that big, but QBR counts rushing yards, and none of those other stats do. So that's interesting to think about. I think the Bills are a little bit less of a lamb to the slaughter than they're perceived to be right now. And then Bortles, Breeze, Alex Smith. Tom Brady's a lot lower than I thought he would be. And then Matt Ryan, Marcus Mariota. Case Keenum is ninth in QBR and eighth in yards per attempt. Has a little bit better of a passer rating, but a very low average depth of target, which all that kind of checks out. He's had a huge impact from yards after the catch with, like, the big Jerick McKinnon game against Cincinnati, and just a lot of screenplays and, like, short passes and stuff. That's how the Vikings offense has been functioning. And then Jared Goff is a really weird case study that is kind of a more extreme example of the same thing. And then Cam Newton and Nick Foles are just sort of, in terms of passing offense at least, just, like, have been not very good at all.
And so, yeah. So, and I know we're going through, we're with the quarterbacks right now, and I'm going to take us kind of off on a tangent, because you mentioned, you know, Case Keenum, you know, for the full season, stats look amazing. But when you break it down and kind of look at recently, start to dig a little bit, they don't look as good as they have looked. And, you know, Arif Hasan wrote a very in-depth piece in which he not only looked at stats, but he also, you know, did some film analysis and looked at some things with Case Keenum. And saw that, you know, he may be doing some things that I think both of you at different points over the course of the season have called out, in that, you know, his sack avoidance, you know, where it was early in the season, likely to regress and wouldn't be as good as things kind of went along. His avoidance of interceptions was something that was likely unsustainable. And so that is one thing, just kind of to take a Vikings tangent here, is, like, how concerned should we be, or should we be concerned at all, just given that the kind of the overall surface level results have been good? Should we be concerned that, you know, Case is no longer kind of in that, you know, top one, two, you know, top five kind of range that he was playing in earlier? And Eric, I'll start with you on that one.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Vikings defense is the best defense in the NFL. Yards per game, yards per play, adjusted, you know, with our metrics, we have them as the best defense in the league, facing one of the better schedules in the league, all that kind of stuff. Ultimately, we want the answer to that question to be, we'll never know. Because if the Vikings can get ahead of teams, I think Case Keenum is sort of sufficiently neutered to this point where we won't have to necessarily see him show himself, you know. The problem becomes if they get behind in a game against, you know, let's say New Orleans or Atlanta, or even, you know, the Eagles, if the Eagles get out ahead of them. I mean, I think that's where a lot of these, like, troubles can come up. And in that case, like, we don't have a ton of data on Case Keenum playing from behind. I think, you know, against Chicago, you know, they were behind, but not by very much. And, you know, he led them there. Against Carolina, there was offensive line issues that kind of stunted their ability in that game. I'm trying to think, you know, the Cleveland game, they were behind a little bit. He played fine. But we really sort of don't know. And I think we're all hypothesizing that, you know, when we've seen Keenum in the past play for weaker teams, he played from behind more, and his numbers and outputs were not, you know, indicative of the quarterback that his, as you said, season-long statistics would suggest. So, I don't know. I mean, my hope is that, you know, the Vikings defense got him to 13-3, got him a first-round bye. The thing, you know, if their defense plays as well as it's played this entire season, the Keenum thing will be less of an issue than people think. That being said, I think Arif is correct that he is the Achilles heel. If you take away the kicker, I think the kicker is the biggest problem the Vikings have. Aside from that, Case Keenum's the unknown with Case Keenum playing in a big game, possibly from behind, a second.
I'd also say that
go ahead, Luke.
In situations where Keenum needed to, like, in situations where the game was not the Vikings comfortably in the lead, I think Case Keenum has. I would look at, like, the Washington game, which turned into kind of a shootout, and the Detroit game is in addition to, like, the first score, you know, when Cleveland got the first score and when the Rams got the first score, and then he was, like, able to answer. I'm okay with the way that the Vikings offense has been able to answer when it, like, needed to. I think we can be a little bit worried about them getting too conservative with the lead, which they've done in the last few weeks. But I'm not, I don't know. I feel like we've gotten a pretty good idea of what Case Keenum is and isn't capable of. And unless we get like way behind and he needs to pull off miracles, like, of course we won't be able to do that. But if I wouldn't feel completely desolate in like a 2 minute, you have to score kind of situation.
All right. That's fair. And I kind of jumped in there and took us off track a little bit. So Luke, you can bring us back here and wrap up the quarterbacks and jump into the run games and the defense to kind of take us through the rest of what you covered in that really awesome article that you wrote.
Yeah, so that's the quarterbacks. I think the biggest takeaway is Case Keenum's been whatever. Nick Foles is horrible, and the Steelers are white hot, and Tyrod Taylor might actually be able to beat the Jaguars. In terms of the run game, the Rams, the Panthers, the Chiefs, and the Buffalo Bills all have really hot run games. I hope the Bills can get LeSean McCoy back. Pittsburgh's also been pretty good. New England has had a really high success rate, but not that much explosiveness in the run game. And then if you look at the bottom parts of it, Jacksonville, New Orleans has not had a very good yards per attempt lately, and their success rate has not been very good lately in terms of the run game. I think most of the damage has been Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram in the pass, and Tennessee just like totally doesn't belong here. Minnesota's been whatever. And then in terms of defense, this is where Minnesota is. They're better in every category. I looked at pass success, run success, explosive passes, and explosive runs. Minnesota is first in three of those categories and second in explosive runs, only behind Atlanta. So they have a defense that you just can't really beat in any way. Like, I don't know how you move the ball on them. You can't throw at Waynes anymore. He's been ascending. You can't throw at Sendejo anymore. He's a lot better than he was in the last couple of years. Can't run at Gedeon. He's been fine. You can't run at Tom Johnson. He's been a decent three tech. Like everybody on the team is good. I don't know who you pick on unless somebody's hurt.
I like all of that. I like all of that. And that feels like a wonderful way to transition us here, because with everything you've just described about the Vikings defense, it seems like we should be the team to beat in these playoffs, especially given that, you know, things go the way we would like them to go. You know, all the games could be played at home for the Vikings, but Eric and his math don't have us as the favorites to win this. So I wanted to give Eric the opportunity to kind of walk us through what he's seeing from a PFF standpoint. And I'm giving him a little bit of grief here because, again, this is another wonderfully written piece, a lot of great detail in here that kind of walks you through how they come up with the numbers that they come with. Don't just look at the graphs. Don't just look at the graphs and then tweet angry things at Eric. Actually go through, because they give you a lot about the process and how they got to where they ultimately came up with here. So, Eric, I'll flip it over to you. Tell us how you've predicted these playoffs to go, just from a strictly mathematical standpoint.
Yeah, and to be clear, the Vikings, we do not assume that playing in their home stadium would give them a full home field advantage for the Super Bowl. That does change their numbers a little bit. But basically, yeah, so we have the Vikings as the front runner to come out of the NFC at about 36%. But they are the third highest probable team to win the Super Bowl at about 13%. And so that basically implies that if they were to play the AFC team, which is going to be most likely the New England Patriots or the Pittsburgh Steelers, that they would be something of a third, you know, something of a 66, 33, 34 proposition. And I think that on its face is defensible, because if you look at like what wins games in the NFL / what wins games in the playoffs, it's quarterback, right? And, Tom Brady is one of the best quarterbacks of all time. He's playing fantastic. And then Ben Roethlisberger, as you guys have said, over the last, I think, like since his bad game against Jacksonville, he's the highest graded quarterback in the NFL so far. So, you know, you have those two teams. Their combined probability to make it out of the AFC is something like almost 90%. So, you know, that's what you're going to face. And so I think any NFC team is going to have a hard time against either one of them. And then the question then becomes is like, Why is New England got such a high probability of winning the Super Bowl at 46% versus the Steelers 17%? And that has to do with basically sort of like the schedule. So in the first, you know, if it goes according to chalk in the first round, basically we give the, you know, we think that the Jaguars have a better chance of beating the Steelers than the Chiefs do of beating New England. So they're, and there's some reasons for that, mostly because the Chiefs have, according to our rating system, one of the worst defense in the NFL if you adjust for schedule and grades and that kind of thing. So there's one extra hoop for the Steelers to jump through. And then if you look at them straight up at New England, we do give a decided edge to New England based upon the fact that the Steelers defense over the last, as Luke said, you know, 4 weeks to 6 weeks without Ryan Shazier, with Joe Hayden a little bit banged up, and, you know, with kind of a secondary and like Sean David, like there's not really a person to cover Rob Gronkowski. So New England, many different ways to beat you. And I think that if, you know, they play the Steelers at home in the AFC Championship game again, you know, we're probably talking about a 2-1, you know, you know, 66-33 kind of game, maybe 60-40 at best. But that's where we're at. So we think the AFC very top heavy and as a whole stronger than the NFC.
I think the only team that has a decent chance to pull a miraculous upset on the Patriots, because I don't think the Steelers can. I don't think their defense has been good enough to slow down Tom Brady. I actually think the Chiefs can win a time of possession grindy battle if they can turn the game, manage to turn the game into that, if they end up playing the Patriots. I think everything is long odds. I think the Patriots have this conference on lockdown for yet another year. But I think the Chiefs could pull one of those upsets that leaves everybody's jaws on the floor.
The only, my only reservation, and you guys know I'm a Chiefs fan, my reservation with the Chiefs is it's going to be very difficult for them to beat Belichick twice. The other thing is that in the first game, Eric Berry came down and played Rob Gronkowski man-to-man, you know, very, very well. And I do not think the Chiefs, with the remaining safeties after Berry tore his Achilles that game, have the ability to stop Gronk. And that takes, you know, Gronk from an average tight end to the best tight end in the league, one of the best tight ends in league history, really. The other thing to note is that the Chiefs really struggle in run defense, and we know that running doesn't matter that much in over like an aggregate. But as we've seen the Steelers do to them, you can exploit it with the Chiefs. You can sort of run on them and get them out of like the dime situation to sort of. You know, they like to play six defensive backs, but if you can run on them, you take them out of that. That's an issue. Deion Lewis, since week five or six, I think he's something like the top five or six in rushing yards in the NFL. So they've committed to a running back, and he's played fantastic through the last like two thirds of the season. So I think just New England has too many ways to kind of beat you. And while the Chiefs offense is super explosive with Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill leading their respective position groups in deep receiving yards, I have a suspicion that with 2 weeks off, New England can somehow figure out a way to slow those two.
Well, all right. So let's take this thing all the way forward here and say that, you know, Vikings do make it out of the NFC, Patriots make it out of the AFC. What will be the keys for the Vikings to pull off that upset and win that game? How does that look? Like, how do the Vikings match up on offense and defense against what the Patriots will be bringing for them? And what would they need to do to shock the world? Eric, we'll start with you on that one.
I think the Vikings, you know, where they've struggled on offense this year is when they've not been successful on first down. And whether that's, you know, grinding it out with Latavius Murray or completing, you know, the short to intermediate passes to the receivers or tight ends, the long yarded situations have plagued them. Case Keenum is, when we do our cluster analysis for quarterback season, like the second tier of quarterbacks, when you take all of his throws, but if you subset it to third and long, he's in some of the lower tier clusters in the league. So he's really struggled in that scenario. The Patriots don't rush the passer very well. And so if you can get them in situations where it's not clear that it's a pass, you stunt that even more. And then you put yourself in a good spot, I think, to take advantage of some of the deficiencies they have in the defensive backfield. On the other side of the ball, it's stopping Gronkowski. with Harrison Smith, hopefully, and somehow figure out a way to keep Brandon Cooks from getting deep. And I think that that presents a bit more of an issue than I think Vikings fans realize, in that he's sort of a smaller, speedier receiver, and both the Vikings corners are kind of the tall, lengthy variety. So we haven't really seen Xavier Rhodes play against that type of receiver in some time. So that'll be an interesting matchup. But to me, it's, again, keeping Keenum out of long yardage situations, and then using their substantial talent level on the defensive side of the ball to create mismatches on defense.
So on the success thing, on the down and distance point, New England has given up, of all the playoff teams, the second most run success, second only to Pittsburgh, which is why I think the Chiefs have a chance to do something crazy. Just being able to stay in those short yardage situations where Alex Smith can actually function. New England's also given up a lot of explosive run plays. So if you get in one of those games where like Jerick McKinnon or Latavius Murray is hot, that can kind of like allow the Vikings to dictate the pace of the game and keep Brady on the sideline, keep the Patriots defense out and gassed. And that would be unbelievably helpful. Conversely, the Patriots have been stingy in the past. They've given up the third least pass success, and I believe also the third least explosive pass plays. So they have really, there's only one way that you can run on them on defense. In this sample, Tom Brady falls a little lower than he probably should. And that's probably because of the Miami game where he struggled. And like, we all know that Miami game is not going to project itself into the playoffs. But if we do end up in a Patriots matchup, yeah, I like Rhodes on Cooks would be interesting. We did see Rhodes against Odell Beckham last year, and that's kind of a quicker receiver rather than like a big, physical Julio Jones type. So that does give me a little hope, although that game felt more dictated by Rhodes getting in Odell's head rather than like his actual ability to play against like quicker receivers. I just kind of hope he's healthy. He's been really banged up the last month, and so I hope he can get healthy over the bye. So in that situation, that would be really interesting. I also wonder if Belichick would try to have Brandon Cooks avoid Rhodes and go into the slot, and then you'd have like Cooks on Newman, which would be an interesting matchup. I think Harrison Smith on Gronkowski, the winner is football fans of that matchup. That would be so incredible. And then just the ability to get pressure on Brady would be helpful too, because
Smith didn't make the Pro Bowl though. So he's
like a scrub, really.
He is a scrub.
He's not very good. I mean, Pro Football Focus probably doesn't like him very much. I mean, what do those guys know about? Oh, wait, no, they graded him the highest graded player. So we like Pro Football Focus this week. Thanks, Eric.
He's the highest graded safety we've ever given out.
It's always a very strange thing, because we hate you for Xavier Rhodes, but we love you for Harrison Smith.
Well, it's like the president with polls.
We only like Rasmussen.
we This one says my approval rating's 42%. Thanks, guys.
Oh man, could you guys, I don't know, I mean, as American citizens, I'm not sure what you can do, but if you guys could like talk to your people and have them not end the world before, our Vikings are supposed to play in the Super Bowl, that'd be really, really great.
Apparently the world ending is 5-1 or 500-1. And of course the real question is like, how do you cash out?
You have a really great bunker, I guess.
Maybe hell froze over, which is causing all of this and will also cause a Vikings Super Bowl, but then the world will end right after.
It might be worth it. Let me look at this Cooks, Brandon Cooks. So Cooks has not played in the slot much at all this year. I would wonder, though,
so if they wouldn't do that.
Would pull that rabbit out of the hat. So Cooks has played, I guess it's like 17% of his routes from the slot. So, not unfamiliar there, but would be something of a wrinkle for them. interested to see sort of like how they deploy their running backs. Of course, that's always an interesting.
Yeah, I was going
to
say Deion Lewis and Eric Kendricks would be a really fun matchup, or Lewis and Barr.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think if Barr ended up on Gronkowski, he'd be able to keep up?
I think his strength is not covering tight ends. I think his strength is sideline to sideline, covering backs out of the backfield, giving a blitz look, whether he actually does blitz or, you know, one of the things he's been fantastic at this year is sort of staying home on fakes. You know, yeah, he doesn't get sort of washed down. And so quarterbacks have not been able to get an edge on them this year, you know, and on bootlegs and stuff, and that's been really good.
That skill is what ended up killing Aaron Rodgers and I guess the rest of the Packers coaching staff.
Right. I mean, gosh, it's so hard for them though. I mean, can you imagine making the playoffs with your backup quarterback? It's gotta be like, they have to be,
it's never happened.
They almost were like the first team in the league history to have a quarterback get hurt and then like have success in that year.
You know? Yeah, that doesn't happen. That's made up fake news business that you guys are talking about, right?
Definitely there. Fake news.
Wow. News, as I call it.
Well, I feel like we've gone completely off a tangent here these last few minutes of the show, I guess. Eric, Luke, anything you want to plug, anything else that we need to talk about before we go on and wrap this thing up?
PFF spread picks out on Friday. My colleague and I, George, are going to get our own podcast on the PFF network. It's going to be called the Pro Football Forecast or PFF Forecast. We haven't completely they've thrown around the idea of changing the main podcast to the Pro Football Focast, but there's strong hashtag resistance to that. So, so George and I are going to start that. It's going to be mostly like, you know, sort of gambling based and you know, somewhat analytics based. So. So you'll get to hear me twice a week now, ish, depending upon how long we do this, how many times a week we do this during the off season, but that's exciting. This is going to be a rough week of games to pick with all these big spreads, but I still think, there's value on New Orleans, at home in the playoffs, giving six and a half to Carolina. So, we'll see what the models say, but my hashtag gut feeling, has, you know, New Orleans, you know, beating Carolina for the third time in three tries this year.
All right. Luke, what you got for us, man?
I love hearing these inner machinations of Pro Football Focus's marketing department. go check out the Are the Vikings the Hottest Team? Also at Purple PTSD, we have an article that people seem to like a lot about Harrison Smith. By Nick Olson. If you are a frequent Redditor, you might know him as World World. He wrote a really, really, really great piece on Harrison Smith and why Harrison Smith is better than you think he is, even if you think he's the best safety in the league. So go check those out. You can also always catch me on the Purple Journal. And I have no idea what I'm going to write about next week, but that will hopefully not be bad content.
I'm sure it won't. I'm sure it'll be fantastic. As you, everything you do is fantastic. And did we break your curse?
Is my curse, reverse jinx?
Is it completely done? The reverse jinx?
I stopped writing about players because of it. I almost wrote about Trey Waynes during his like valley of the season, and then he turned it around too. So maybe
you thought about it, and you fixed it for us. So thank you.
I don't know. If my reverse jinx is true, then the Vikings defense will be really bad and they'll lose in the first playoff game.
Okay, well then stop writing about the Vikings.
Yeah.
Yeah, stop that.
I'll write about how good the Saints are or something.
Yeah, do that. Yeah, I like that. Or like, you know, the Patriots are the greatest team ever or something. Something, something. But all right. I think we covered everything we want to today. Getting ready for this wonderful week. It's nice, but also strange to go into this week with like no stress at all. Like, I'm not really sure what to do with myself. Kind of, I'm just gonna kick back, watch all these games, and sip on some beers, or follow Luke's plan for this first week of the playoffs, and then we can jump back into all the terror, fear, and arguing about backup quarterbacks, I guess, next week.
Yeah. God bless Arif.
God bless him.
I told him on Twitter, I was like, listen, sometimes the bell rings. You got to let the class get out of the room and you got to let that guy drop.
I think he's having a blast.
Well, yeah, with that guy. Nobody wins in those scenarios. I had a Twitter spat about quarterback. Like, I showed him all these statistics about how red zone efficiency is not stable year to year for quarterbacks. And it just wasn't having any of it. You're a nerd. You've never watched football before. All the same stuff. And eventually I'm just like, I can't do this anymore. Can't. I eventually just told him, I said, take intro stats. Every single tweet was like, take intro stats.
If you are listening to this and you're the kind of person who wants to take on these rubes head on, please go head over to the Purple PTSD Facebook page. I love that group of people because they are incredibly loyal and dedicated to the Purple PTSD content, which I love, and it's great. Go over there and see if you want to pick a good fight. You'll be able to find one on the Purple PTSD Facebook page.
I just joined it here. I joined it with my burner account though, so
that's fine. I'm just gonna like is a like.
Oh man. the favorite thing that I've learned through all of this is that Yinka is Muslim apparently, and Arif is Somali, which is yeah.
Who called Yinka Muslim?
Some random guy on Twitter got angry about an article he wrote and was like, Muslims shouldn't write about football. We're like, Yinka's like, because like, I'm Christian, but I understand how my name might throw you off. And, you know, Arif is now Somali. So, you know.
Because I responded to that and I said, you're not even good at racism, man. I was like, not that I'm a proponent of it. Like I'm thinking like, take some pride in what you do. Like, if you're gonna be a racist, then like at least get it right. You know what I'm saying? Like,
oh man,
like. If you're gonna stink, be Brock Osweiler. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Brock Osweiler is really the best at being a bad quarterback.
Yeah, like go for it, man. Go for it. Like, Anyway, I a tangent there.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. We're done. Yeah, the music is already playing at this point, and yeah. Guys, as always, thank you very much. Listeners, thank you for sticking with us through all of this and all of the tangents and all of the madness that we've kind of taken you through here towards the end of this podcast. It was a lot of fun. And yeah, we'll be back soon to talk about not just the randomness of the playoffs, but the randomness of the playoffs, including our Vikings, with more specificity once we get an opponent after this weekend. So yeah, y'all have a good one. Talk to you soon.